am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me. I am who I am. I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit, moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.
Hey everybody, it's Monday and it's Purpose Talk Radio. This is your host, Jan Revell. I'm delighted to be with you today. We have Sharon Hinckley who's going to join us in a little bit. We're not quite sure what happened to her, but she's MIA at the moment. I'm sure she's trying to get in. So let's take care of some housekeeping business and some other things while we're at it. Purpose Talk Radio is radio with a purpose, a soul purpose, and I'm really delighted that you're here to join us. I hope you will stay with us throughout the program. Join us on the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations page on Facebook or group on Facebook. For anybody who is just joining us, remember you go to Facebook and do a search for Purpose Talk Radio Conversations. Request to join the group, and Cindy will be glad to bring you in, and you can join in the conversations that go on there during the whole show, and actually sometimes before and certainly after the show. Our theme song is called I Am Who I Am, and it was created by True Trinity. This is a group made up of Cindy Freeman, Jillian Clark, and Rachel Martinez. They're also on Facebook, and you can find them on TrueTrinity.com, where you can find out more about them, and you can also purchase the music. So you can get a hold of me at jan@purposetalkradio.com. You can also find me on Facebook. Go to the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations page, and I'm there most of the time. So you can connect with me there. I want to let you know that I can't wait for Sharon to get on because, oh, I think she's here. Well, we'll put her on hold for just a minute here because I can't even pronounce the name of this festival that she went to. So we're going to have her do that. We'll talk about that in just a minute. The rest of the housekeeping is I want you to know that we're going to do some oracle cards after the interview with Sharon. I've drawn 3 cards. If you have a question or concern, you can call in or connect via Skype, and you can ask your question and tell me which card you want, number 1 through 3. I also have the deck if you would prefer to draw a card of your own, or you can just have an open angel reading, and whatever comes through is what you're supposed to hear. So it's your choice. Isn't that pretty exciting? I want to let you know before we get started here that next week is April 1st. It's April Fool's Day, and on April Fool's Day, my friend Sue Broom, who is also an angel reader, and I are going to do a show that is just angel readings. So be prepared. We're getting ready for a great show. It's going to be a fun show. It's going to be not only angel readings, and well, I mean, they're angel readings, but it's not just for April Fools. They're not going to be joke readings. That's an idea. Maybe I should give a joke reading somewhere along the line. But if I do, I'll warn you about it. So I think that I have taken care of all of the, let me see, Cindy sent me the checklist and I actually printed it off. So, oh, look at that. I did everything I'm supposed to do. Isn't that great? Okay. So we're going to bring Sharon in just a minute here, but I want to tell you a little bit about Sharon before I do bring her in. And Sharon lives in La Jolla, California. She has published, and I have it hanging on my wall, she has published a wonderful calendar, the La Jolla 2013 calendar. She says, I'm so clever at naming things. And it's a great, it's got some wonderful photographs that Sharon has taken. I really, really love it. She says, I'm the original baby boomer because the baby boom officially started on January 1, 1946, and she was born on January 12. So now you know how old she is. But I'll tell you, she's still younger than I am. Uh-oh. And so she likes to do numerology a little different. Instead of adding all those numbers together, she takes her birthday number and adds across until she arrives at a number she likes. And this year she is 13 years old. How's that? That's pretty cool, isn't it? Okay, well, I'm going to bring Sharon in and we'll get her to join the conversation here now. And she can tell us more about herself and about what she's been doing recently. And also, I'm going to ask Sharon about this, her adventures in the rice paddy in Taiwan. So, Sharon, hi. How are you today?
I am fabulous, Jan. Thank you so much. And I want to, before I forget, give a big thank you to you and Cindy for everything that you do to keep this radio show alive and vital. It's a wonderful service that you provide.
Well, thank you. And I agree with you. I appreciate Cindy completely. She does almost all the work around here. She monitors the calls of people who are calling in, and she monitors the facilitates the Facebook page. But you do that too sometimes. So I want to thank you as well.
It's fun to do.
All right. So tell us the name of this festival that you went to in India.
It's called Kumbh Mela, and Mela simply means festival, and okay. Kumbh is actually to pour, and one of the, let's see if I can give the history, the history is best if I can. The divine came to earth in the form of the Ganges River from, you know, from the stars, or that's, anyway, one of the teachings.
Okay.
And by bathing in the Ganges River at auspicious times, you're actually cleansing your past karmas. You're releasing things from the past that you no longer need or are not beneficial. And I
Do you actually have to bathe in the river? Can you just walk in it, or you poured it over your head or whatever? Does that suffice?
There were, I think, about 12 people in our group that actually did bathe in the river. Most of us just took some of the water and splashed it on our head. And you're actually, you can go into the water with your hands, but you're technically not supposed to put just your feet in the water unless you put your whole body in.
Oh.
And the most auspicious place to do this is where the Ganges River and the Yamuna River and the Saraswati River, which is now, it was a river that existed at one time, and so it's the place where that river would have been. Anyway, where these three rivers come together is called the Sangam. And so it's the most auspicious place to do that. However, it can also be very, very crowded on the days that are considered the most auspicious. So having said that, it is... it's not like a football crowd or a soccer crowd. The people are respectful, and there tends not to be pushing for the sake of pushing. Though having said that, it has happened that just because there were so many people attending this event this year, they said there were 80 million people. So that's
my
more
gosh.
In D.C., New York, and Paris.
Oh, wow.
Now, I probably didn't see all 80 million of them, but I did see quite a few. And the day that I only went into the Mela proper one day, though I did a number of other things when we were there. And we were staying right on the Ganges River. We had a beautiful view of the Ganges from our campus. This particular festival, Kumbh Mela, happens only once every 12 years. And I'm imagining it's probably going to take me at least 12 years to digest all the experiences from this trip.
Wow. How long is the festival? How long does it go on?
You know, that's a good question. I think it really probably goes on for a month and a half, or maybe a little longer altogether.
Oh, wow.
Because there are different days that are considered auspicious. So in a way, it might be analogous to having a county fair that covers the size of an entire county, or maybe even a small state. And at this festival, there are holy men, there are different ashrams that come. There are Bollywood comes, and they have musical presentations. There are people selling food or saris or bracelets. So it's a whole collection of basically life happening at the edge of the river. And I was taught that actually the original festival was done with fire. So our particular group, on the most auspicious day when they were there, we had a fire ceremony, and you put these flowers into the fire as an offering to be giving up that which is no longer serving, that which you want to be cleansed from. And I didn't realize until afterwards you're supposed to sort of gently offer these things to the fire. And I was a little aggressive, and I was really throwing my flowers. I'm pretty sure the fire probably wasn't too upset. And I now, when I do fire ceremony, I'm a little more gracious in the way that I make my offering. So I'm learning.
That's good. I like that. So, how long were you there at the festival and in India? Was your entire time spent there at the festival?
No, it was a 3-week trip. Altogether, I went with the Himalayan Institute, which organized the tour. Their center is in Honesdale, Pennsylvania, in the United States. It was originally founded by Swami Rama, who is one of the people who brought yoga into the West. And we arrived in India on a Sunday, I guess about 3:00 in the morning, and took a bus from India to Agra. And so our first night we spent in a beautiful hotel in Agra, and we visited the Taj Mahal. And then the following day we took a bus ride to Allahabad, which is where the festival occurred. And so even though there were 80 million people in the surroundings and chanting and thunder rolling and peacocks meowing and Bollywood singing and even though there were all these sorts of things going on in the surrounding, we were very blessed to be on a couple of acres of literally grass land that were on the edge of the Ganges River. And we were living in what they call eco huts. So some people had a whole hut. Most of us had 4 people living together in a hut. And we had a table where we could put our luggage, and we had cots with a nice sheet and a mattress pad and a pillow and mosquito net. And people either brought their own sleeping bag or a blanket, because it could be very cold at night, and yet it could be very hot during the day. And they prepared all of our meals, and they did a lovely job with the cooking and the food being very good. And then since it was their own property, they actually had their own well. So we could turn on water on a tap and brush our teeth, which is something that normally is not a good idea. And, you know, so it was camping, but it was deluxe camping.
Deluxe camping. And what is this group? This is the Himalayan what?
It's called the Himalayan Institute.
Okay.
And they have pages on Facebook describing themselves and telling about this trip as well.
Okay.
And it was beautifully organized, beautifully arranged. Anyway, we were in Allahabad, where the festival, where the Kumbh Mela is held. We were there for about a week, and then we went again by bus to Khajuraho, which is the location of some of the most well-known erotic temples in India. Beautiful architecture, just amazing works of art. And again, we were staying on the Himalayan Institute property, so we again were in the eco hut. But I was so happy when we got there. It wasn't quite so noisy as at Allahabad. In fact, at Allahabad, there was one evening, for whatever reason, it was quiet, and I was so unused to the quiet, I couldn't sleep. I was, you know, there's no whistling tonight. There's no, you know, what's going on here? But in Khajuraho, again, they have a beautiful, beautiful property. And Panditji, part of the reason for this trip was that Panditji has built a beautiful shrine, and we were among the group that was inaugurating this shrine. And what I was going to say is our huts in Khajuraho were at least 6 inches, maybe a whole foot larger than the hut that we had in Allahabad.
Luxury.
My cot was at least 2 inches wider, and I had budgeted for this trip to have my laundry done. I had figured that it wasn't going to be that expensive, and I wanted to spend my time doing things other than washing clothes. So I had taken 5 clothespins with me, just as there were a few things I thought I probably would want to wash myself. Well, there was a loophole. They would wash your laundry, but they wouldn't wash it unless they ironed it. And they don't have permanent press irons, at least not in this part of India. They just have a very hot iron, which would have killed all my clothes. So I spent the better part of the trip not only washing myself in a bucket, but washing all of my laundry in a bucket. Well, when we got to Khajuraho and we went into our hut, there were at least 20 clothespins already in the hut. It was so exciting because it was windy there, and which was wonderful. It made the clothes dry faster, but you had to pin them to the line, or they would land in the dirt, which, of course, would defeat the purpose of washing them. But I'm truly grateful that I went the way that I went and that I had the experience that I have. I've traveled in India before. This is my second time going to India. But I was so amazed to think, I have a toilet and a tub and a toothbrush and a towel, and they are all in the same place every morning. I don't have to go looking for them. They're right there. And I had discovered that I had let my personal practice lapse a bit. And I thought, Sharon, when you go home, you're going to have at least 2 to 3 extra hours every day because you can bathe yourself so quickly and you have a machine that does all of this laundry for you. I mean, it's so amazing the things that we have that we don't even recognize or appreciate.
Isn't that something? Yeah. Mm. Wow. Well, you know, this is a perfect time to pause because Cindy just asked me if I had done the show card, and I said, oh, I forgot about doing that. So this is a perfect time to do it because the card, the name of the card for today's show is called Adoration.
Ah, oh.
And yeah, and so it fits right in with this festival that you attended and that people were. But before I read the card, I want to know a little bit more about the Ganges River and this festival. How did the festival come into being?
You know, I am going to have to look for the exact history of that.
Okay.
And I will get it back to you. It's one of these things that has been going on so long. But it's basically, as I said in the beginning, it's the recognition of our journey from the stars to the earth. And the Ganges River itself, we're alive. The river is alive. And it's really a celebration of life. And I think in India, there is a sense of community that I don't quite think we have in the West. And there is, I would say, this veil of poverty. I don't know what else to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not all of India. Delhi has an incredibly modern airport. The freeway into the airport in Delhi is much nicer than the one I was riding on in Los Angeles yesterday. But there is so much, I'm not even sure that I want to call Western civilization progress, but there is so much that just simply is happening the way it has happened for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there is this, I don't know how to, it's almost like there's an underlying sense of joy. And there's a connection with the earth, a connection with the mother that is beautiful. It is beautiful.
Right. So it's not a festival of the poor, really. It's a festival for everybody, and it's specifically religious, so it has to do with releasing karmic events or debts.
Well, that's definitely a part of it. And then also the sadhus, the holy men come. And then people, it's considered an honor and a blessing to cook for the sadhus because they just have what they wear on their backs, and there's some of them that don't wear anything on their back or their front. They're completely dedicated to the service of the divine.
Okay. All right. So a question on, does the festival name mean like journey from the stars to the earth?
No.
Or that's just the river.
It's kind of washing. It's kind of purification. In a way, it's probably not all that different from baptism in Christianity or using a mala to, and I'd be happy for someone to correct me on that, but it does seem like all of the religious traditions have the concept of cleaning with water and purification with water, not just for physical bathing, but for bathing the energy field and beyond.
Right.
Right.
So if anybody wants to call in and talk with Sharon about this, and also when you want to call in for a reading later on, the number to call is 347-205-9074. Let me repeat that, 347-205-9074, or you can connect via Skype. If you do connect via Skype, just remember that you have to create a Blog Talk Radio event account. It's free, but you'll have to sign in. You can also go to the Purpose Talk Radio Conversations page and be able to type your question in there, and Cindy will relay it to me if that's your preferred method of doing it, and also to a question for Sharon and or for a reading when we get to that following the interview, when we get to that part of it. So I want to go on with this card, which is called Adoration. And the card shows a woman. Well, again, most of the cards in this deck are female, but these actually are two angels. Oh, I love it. They're two angels. One angel is all in white, silvery white. They're both facing forward. And the one who is in the white has her right hand upright in a blessing, and her left hand is a little bit lower, as though she is sending, both hands look like she is sending energy to whoever she's adoring here. The other angel is all in gold. And this other, the one in gold appears to be a little bit older. So there's a, isn't that interesting? I never thought of angels as being younger or older, but here we go. This one seems to be a little bit older. She too has her left hand raised that's in blessing and in adoration. The colors are absolutely gorgeous. This silver, white silver has a little bit of blue tinge to it, and the gold has some blue and green and red and yellow colors, all just vibrant colors all through them. Both of these angels are looking at the object of their adoration. And they also appear, because they appear not only to be looking outward, but to be looking inward, which makes sense. When we recognize that the divinity is not only outside of ourselves, but inside of within us, then we have to understand that that adoration goes externally as well as internally. So remember to adore your own godhood inside of yourself, that divinity within you, as well as recognizing the divinity in everyone that you meet, no matter what they look like, whether they wear clothes on their back or not, whether they smell good or not, they are still divinity. And they are worthy of our adoration. And we are each worthy of adoration. So that's the card for today, which seems to fit in with this festival that you went to, Sharon.
Yeah, I was thinking it couldn't have been more perfect. And I wanted to make a comment about the is smelling good or not. So the areas where we were, the food wasn't particularly spicy. But I, at one point in my life, had an opinion that Indian people weren't necessarily very clean, because sometimes they have a very pungent, to my nose, aroma. And what I realized is actually I think most of the people in India are far cleaner than we are, which is really quite an accomplishment when they don't have all of the bathing facilities that we do. However, because some of the food is very spicy, mm-hmm. there is like a kind of body odor that right. we notice, because we or just like Asian people refer in some areas to Americans as butter stinking, because we right. eat butter, and that creates an odor that we're not aware of because most of us eat it. So it's just part of the sea that we swim in.
Right. I remember being in a car one time with three other people. They were vegetarian. I was not. And they ate lots and lots of garlic. And it was a very pungent automobile ride, let me tell you. because it was not only the garlic, but there were some gaseous odors that went along with it. It was a really trying experience for me. And I remember thinking about that, but then I also remember reading at another time or hearing where the Caucasians are very often classified as smelling like milk or butter or some of the foods that we eat. And you just don't think about it. You know, I mean, when people eat a lot of curry or a lot of spicy foods or a lot of, it doesn't matter. We literally are what we, not only what we think, but what we eat. And we smell it, too. But I'm also reminded of the Facebook thing that went around and an email that I saw that went around about the woman who and her family who went into a McDonald's and were standing in line, and all of a sudden everybody around them started backing up and moving away. And the woman turned around and realized that there was a man, there were some homeless men standing behind her, and they were odoriferous, is perhaps the best way to say it. And they were counting the pennies in their hand, and when it came time to order, they said that they were going, they just wanted a cup of coffee because of all the money they had. And everybody else had stepped away, and this woman did not step away. I get tears when I even, I'm going to get teary talking about it here. But in any case, she went up to the counter, and, oh dear, and she ordered three meals. And when they came, she took them to these men to give them to them, because it was obvious that they needed food, they didn't have the money, and nobody else was going to do anything because these men smelled. And I think about, too, the time when I was on my way from Oregon to Arizona, and I stopped at a motel that was a $25 a night motel room, so you can imagine what the conditions were like. And the people who were there were people that, in my judgment, I would say were, they were poor, they were missing teeth, they were, well, okay, I can just leave it at that. They weren't dressed the best. But my experience there was they took care of me. They were my angels for that night. And so it was important, an important lesson again, or reiteration of a lesson, to not judge angels by their clothing or by their smell.
I love the way you phrased that. And I would like to share an experience from my first trip to India. We were flying from Delhi to Kashmir, and I could see that the flight attendant was having trouble with his ears. I guess the plane wasn't pressurized that well, and he was clearly uncomfortable. And I had some chewing gum, and I said, oh, I have some chewing gum. Would you like that? And he said, yes. So I handed him the chewing gum, and he handed it back to me, and he didn't take it. And I said, well, you know, what's wrong with my chewing gum? You know, what? Why didn't you take it? He said, I can't take that. And I said, why? And he said, it's your last piece. And I had given him a package that had just one stick of gum in it, and I had to open my purse, show him that I had more gum before he would take the stick of gum. And I have to confess, to this day, if my ears were popping and you had the gum, I would probably still jump you for it. But I was just... integrity of that. I mean, he was in pain, and that gum would have helped him, but he had such integrity of, I was so touched by that. Or when we were in the, we spent our first night and our last night in India in this beautiful hotel in Agra, and I had something that I needed help with, and the concierge was so, I am here to serve you, and I mean, I truly felt so genuinely served by the concierge in this hotel. It was amazing. But I do want to talk a little bit more about the festival itself, and then some of the I guess actually for me, some of the highlights were going into the villages. There were villages near both of the campuses where we stayed. And just walking in the villages, walking through the mustard field, seeing the people, it was just a beautiful experience. And the people, they don't have much, but they seem to be fully engaged in whatever they're doing, whether it's resting or sweeping or gathering mustard or washing or carrying clothing. There doesn't seem to be a lot of angst about what needs to be done. It just is done. And one of the villages that we went, I actually went into several of the courtyards of the houses. Now, the village street is pretty not clean looking. I swear these courtyards were cleaner than my living room, and I do not keep a water buffalo in my living room. There had to be an amazing amount of sweeping going on to keep that space so beautiful, so sacred. And sacred, my understanding is the meaning of the word is to make holy. And somehow we've taken that and turned it into sacrifices or, but if it, to me, the meaning of the word sacred is to honor and to make holy.
Mm-hmm.
Or to maybe to acknowledge that which is holy.
So they were making a holy area in their home, or they're at least in the courtyard portion. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I'm imagining, I didn't visit inside any of the homes, but a few people did. And I think that they had the experience that the homes themselves, for the most part, were, you know, kept very clean and orderly.
Mm-hmm. I wonder with our listeners, I'm going to ask you, and particularly if you're in the Purpose Talk Radio conversation group on Facebook, if you would post up an answer to this, but how many of us actually set up an area of our home and or the entire home as a sanctuary? I know I do. My home is a sacred space, and it's just what you said, is to make it holy. It isn't that it's necessarily, I can't say that it's the most pristine or cleanest, but it is a very sacred space for me, and and I value that in my home. And I'm wondering how many of our listeners do that same thing, either have a space in their home or the entire home that they set up as sacred. So go ahead and tell us some more about the festival. Well, you said you wanted to talk more.
Yeah, what you were saying, I wanted to add something about yoga. Asana, the word asana means seat. And it actually, an asana was a woven mat that people would sit upon to do their meditation practice. And the hatha yoga practice, the physical practice of doing the poses, was actually designed to release stress from the body so that when you sat, you would be comfortable and be able to turn your attention inward without being distressed. So part of the practice of yoga, and if there's so many parts, but part of the practice of yoga is simply to have your body in a relaxed and healthy condition so that you're not distracted by anything that's going on in the body. The body is working smoothly.
Mm-hmm. Well, that certainly makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And then the festival itself, as I said, there's so much, and it's so rich. There is, you can take these little offerings of flowers and offer them to the river, or you can meet with the different sadhus who give different teachings. In fact, one of the women in our group actually, she actually left the group and flew to Rishikesh and spent several days staying in a cave with one of the sadhus who cooked for her and gave her gave for teaching. So there was a wide variety of experience from all of what we did. Now, from the Western standpoint of view, the Ganges River has a lot of bacteria and other things in it that we don't consider healthy. Though, to the best of my knowledge, everyone who went into the river stayed healthy. They didn't become ill. And I sometimes wonder if we didn't know dirt was dirt, if it would be dirt.
Well, you know, you stop and think about our grandparents and our parents and generations before, and even ourselves as children. I mean, I ate dirt. We ate mud pies. That was part of being a child and growing up. And you know, we go camping, and in the camping, when we go camping, we're often, if we're not in an RV, of course, and we often get dirty. So, but is the Ganges River polluted? I guess there's a difference between dirty and polluted, at least in my mind. Polluted means that there is really ugly, nasty stuff in there that's going to, you know, like chemicals and stuff that's going to kill fish and kill you. Whereas dirty is just dirt.
You know, that's a good question. There's, I don't know the answer to that. I don't really know if there's chemicals in addition to human and animal waste. I'm guessing that there's probably less chemical use simply because, A, it's expensive, and, B, there were so many birds. There were just so many birds, and I'm imagining that many birds wouldn't be able to thrive if there were a lot of chemicals. So there are places in India where there are different factories, thankfully not anywhere that I was, but that there are different factories that have created horrible chemical pollution. So, but not, as far as I know, in those particular areas.
So this festival is held once every 12 years, so it's not going to be held again for another 12 years.
2025. I mean, now they're smaller melas every year, but the big festival is every 12 years, and then there's a big festival, which is every 144 years. The last one of those was in 2001, so I'm guessing that I probably won't be attending.
not in this present incarnation anyway, huh?
Exactly. It was funny when we were walking through one of the villages, this older man came out of the house, and I don't really know what question he was trying to ask, but the question he did ask was, how many times have you lived here?
An
interesting question.
I just had somebody do the emotion code. She's learning this process called the emotion code, and she needed, for her practicum, she needed people to practice on. So I was one of the people that she did it with, and she made a comment about some emotion, trapped emotion, that I had that was from like 481 lifetimes ago.
So
that's the first time I've heard anything about how many lifetimes I've had, but I've never looked into it before either. But that was interesting that he would ask you how many lifetimes you've had there.
I'm actually guessing what he was trying to say was, how often have you visited India? But I could be, it's sometimes what people actually say can be even more real than what they were intending to say.
Right.
But there was in our schedule there was time for chanting and meditation, and we didn't have yoga practice every day, And I have to confess that every time there was a yoga practice, there was either a lecture or a meeting or some other obligation that I had. So I didn't, I wasn't really doing as much of the physical practice in yoga as I was, I think, just soaking in the entire experience. And then having that, talking about the part of coming full circle, when we lived in Taiwan, and there's a black hole in my house that has eaten the picture. I know it's in the house somewhere, but I so remember I was painting in this rice paddy, and I had the distinct awareness that when you are in the center of your heart, that you are connected with everything in the entire universe. And I didn't really know what to do with that information or what I was supposed to do with it, or I kind of had the sneaking suspicion that I wasn't really the first person to make this discovery, but I kind of was wondering who else knew, and it was just an awareness that I have carried with me. And it was exactly 33 years since I had that awareness when I walked into the campus at Kajuraho in Nepandaji and found that heart-shaped leaf. And when I picked up that leaf, I was thinking, oh, there's some tree here that has leaves in that shape. Mm-hmm. But it was the only heart-shaped leaf that I could find. I just got lucky and found that one. And I guess one of the things that I want to say is I feel so blessed to have gone to India and to have been able to go again, and I'm hoping that I shall make another trip. But you don't have to go to India to connect with the divine. It's right where you are, everywhere. And somehow we've just gotten a little absent-minded, I think maybe literally absent-minded, about the fact that the divine travels within us and without us. And, you know, some people are so focused on, well, I just have to spend all my time going inside, and there are other people that are constantly looking, I think the way you put it is for the next shiny thing. And the shiny things are wonderful, and the inside bits are wonderful. And I think they're all to be celebrated. And I think that's something that in the West we go from one thing to one thing to one thing, and we don't stop. We don't stop and celebrate 20 clothespins in our hut. I mean, how amazing is that? It is.
When you learn to celebrate the little things, sometimes it takes being in a situation like you were in, where there is fewer of the amenities that we're accustomed to, and like clothespins. And when you see 20, when you've only had 5, that's like a luxury. That is just incredible.
Yeah.
To have that much. So you do yoga, and you teach yoga.
I do.
Let's talk a little bit about you and what you're doing now here in the States, and how people can get in touch with you. So you teach yoga in La Jolla, right?
I have 2 classes every week at a place called the La Jolla Firehouse.
Okay.
Herschel Avenue. It's part now of the YMCA. It was the original firehouse and jail for La Jolla. The jail cell is still there. we don't teach yoga there. And I teach a very body-friendly kind of style of yoga. What I teach there is more of a contemplative, meditative practice. it would probably fall into the category of what you would call yin yoga. Most of the hatha yoga that came into the United States was actually designed to teach to young Indian princes, and it was highly influenced by the British calisthenics. And so we tend to have the impression that if you can, you know, wrap your leg around your neck and put your right foot in your left ear, that's yoga. And that is, I mean, that's fun to do, and it does require a...
It's fun to do? I do good standing on one foot. It's fun to be able to wrap your leg around your... What did you say?
Your neck or... what?
Yeah.
Know. But what I was going to say, the physical practice really is a very small part of the whole realm of yoga. And traditionally, if you were going to study yoga, you would serve the master for maybe 12 years before you even started learning the poses. And as I said, the purpose of the poses was really to open you to these deeper levels of awareness and understanding, and so that you would have the ability to meditate without being distracted. What else did I want to say about yoga? And at the same time, I personally find that I also enjoy doing the more active practices as well. There is a yoga saying that the practice, meaning the hatha yoga practice, that will heal you today could kill you tomorrow. So there's times for being active. It's just like in nature. There's really times that this is not a good idea to plant. Things are not going to grow when it's starting to snow. So your practice needs to be geared to your condition and your stage in life. So having said that, I don't have the opportunity, or I don't teach many children, but children in our culture are so, I want to say, over-programmed. They have their soccer lesson and their music lesson and their extra lesson and their this lesson and this club and that club. And I find that when I do teach children, often the very favorite part of the class for them is when they have meditation and they're actually given permission to be silent.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, Sharon, if people want to get in touch with you for either your artwork, because you've had lots of exhibitions and shows for your photography, and you teach watercolor basics, so you've got books that are for sale, too. So there's all these things that you do related to art and spirituality. If they want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
My website is LaJollaArt.com or SharonHinckley.com, either one.
Okay, and so La Jolla, let's spell it, is LAJOLLA.
Yeah.
And then the word art, ART.com, right?
Yes. And or SharonHinckley.com. I think they both hopefully go to the same page. And I'm also on Facebook under Sharon Hinckley. I am going to make a page about this trip that I've taken. I haven't started that yet, but I will post the link when I do that. My email is Sharon Yogart, SharonYogart, at san.rr.com.
Say that again, at what? S-A-N?
Like San Diego, S-A-N, and then dot, R-R, like railroad, dot.
Oh, okay, dot com, okay.
It's actually
right.
Railroad. But, and I had also pulled out a card. I hope you don't mind my...
Oh, please, yeah.
Anyway, it's from the Chunbu Gyung deck, which comes from a Korean energy practice. And the card says, creation arises from an empty mind.
Mm.
And in the vein of teaching what I most need to learn, it's so important to have times that are quiet, times away from the computer, times when you're just sitting in the dirt, doing absolutely nothing.
Nothing. It's true. To be able to spend that time just with yourself, with your own divinity.
Yes.
Yeah.
And all also, right. I love what you said with your card, acknowledging the divinity in all that you meet, no matter what they look like or even smell like.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Sharon, is there anything that we've missed? Anything that you'd like to say that I haven't asked you or that has come up in your thoughts in the meantime?
Oh, I'll probably think of something after the show. But I guess, I'm so grateful to have had the opportunity to have the trip. I'm so delighted to be able to share it with you on the radio. And it's so wonderful that things are archived so that we can listen at any time and add further comments as they
think.
And as far as particular yoga physical practices, I think it's really important that everyone move their body every day. Your brain is pretty hard to massage because it's got this hard shell around it. And every time you move a part of your body, it's actually connected to a part of your brain. And one of the things I love about yoga is every time I think I've learned every pose I could possibly learn or move my body in every possible way, they come up with 10 more directions. I didn't even know were there. So it's an ever-expanding, practice.
All right. Well, I want to invite people to, we're almost done here with our interview with Sharon, but I want to invite you to call in if you would like to have a reading, and Sharon's going to hang out here with me for a little bit, and maybe she'll draw a card for you too, but the number is 347-205-9074, and we'll be around for a few more minutes waiting to see if anybody wants a reading. There was something I was going to mention, Sharon, but I forgot it, so I guess I'm not going to mention it.
it'll come back if it's important.
Yeah, really, really. Well, I have three cards that I drew. If there's anybody who has a question and would like a particular card, if you'd like an angel reading or a card reading, again, you can call in, and we'll be here for a few minutes to give you that opportunity. While you were talking, Sharon, I did end up actually being a tiny bit distracted while you were talking about distractions, actually, because two quail came up to my patio door and were poking around here, so I had to grab my phone and take the camera and hold it way over the edge of the desk so I could see them. So I will post the photos of the quail. I've never seen them come up to the door this close before, so that was kind of fun and exciting.
Very auspicious.
Yes, I do too. So, and there's just totally off on a tangent here while we're waiting for a few minutes, is we have a critter around here called a javelina. It's spelled like javelin, only it's pronounced javelina. And a javelina is a member of the peccary family. It looks like a wild boar, has little tusks and has huge shoulders, big shoulders and a little teeny butt. And the babies are just as cute as can be, but the big guys are actually kind of intimidating. And I kept saying, I want to see one. I've seen evidence of them in the yard because they run through the yard and they dig up roots and look for bugs. They like to eat grubs and bugs, and they also eat cactus, which I think is kind of bizarre, but I've seen the evidence of, on some cactus that they've been chewing on. And I did get to see one the other day. I was coming home, and there's quite a few roundabouts on the road between Sedona and the village of Oak Creek where I live. And I was coming around the roundabout, and this javelina ran across the road in front of me, scared me. Fortunately, it was far enough away so I could stop in time, but I saw the size of those shoulders and thought, that could damage my car. I'm really glad that I didn't connect with that little big javelina. So we do have a caller, and I'm going to bring the caller on. The area code is 608, and you're on the air. This is Jan. Who's this?
Hi, Jan. This is Sue.
This Hi,
is Sue. Sue that you know.
This is Sue the Angel Reader.
This is Sue the Angel Reader. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to call and see what kind of thought or angel card you have for me today.
Oh, okay. All right. Would you like both of us to draw a card for you?
That would be awesome.
All right. And I have three cards drawn, which you can choose from one of those, or we can go through the deck and you can tell me to stop and pick your own card if you'd like. And I'm not sure how Sharon works.
Okay. I'll say for you, Jan, I'll pick number two.
I knew you were going to say that. Okay. Do you want to tell us what your question is, or do you want to just keep that secret?
I'm just looking for what do I need to know from my angel today.
Okay. The card is Madonna, and it is a pretty amazing card. The background is completely gold, and there is a gold sun behind the figures of a young woman and a baby. And the both of them are bedecked in jewels. The young woman is wearing a crown with lots and lots of jewels, and the jewels could be stars too. It's kind of because there are these little orbs all around them as well. So there are angels and jewels all over the mother and the child. She's holding the child. Neither one of them, they're looking very quiet and meditative, actually. They're just spending some time together. And I think based on the story, they are acknowledging and appreciating the divinity inside each of them. And they are also surrounded by all of these jewel-like orbs. So there are many, many, there's too many to count, many angels who are around them, not just around the head, but all over the place, in front of the bodies, beside the bodies, just everywhere. The main color, there's one splotch of color on her robe, and it is let me see. I want to use the word magenta, but I don't know what magenta really means. So it's kind of a purpley red. And there's a little bit of green on the child's head and then on the other side of her robe as well. So I would suggest for today, in any case, that those are the colors that should be prominent in your wardrobe and perhaps on you. Maybe if you have some crystals or stones, those are the colors that are going to be really good for you today. Remember a couple of things. Number one is the divinity within you, that you are the mother and the child. You have just published a book, so the child, in a way, is something that you have birthed, is your child, and there is that divinity in both of them. And that the angels are completely around you, and to make sure that you acknowledge and appreciate them. Not only that, but that they're really excited and they're celebrating you. Yeah. So you are being celebrated as well. Sharon, do you have something to add to that?
Well, I worked a little differently. When she said that she wanted a card, I just pulled out the first card that came to my hand, and it said, inside and outside are the same. Just as there is an infinite and empty space outside our bodies, there is an infinite and empty space inside our bodies. These two voids are interconnected, which I think was what you were saying, celebrating the divinity on the inside and on the outside. And with the theme today being, or at least part of it being heart-centered, magenta and green are both considered colors of the heart.
Oh, All right.
Wow.
So does that?
Both of those are beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And it does. It feels like the mother and child. It does feel like the child is actually the book for me. Mm-hmm. And, yes, I do feel like I've birthed. And I know that I have so many angels around me, so it's beautiful, beautiful. Both cards are absolutely beautiful. I'm right on, spot
awesome.
On.
Awesome. And for all of our listeners, this is the Sue who's going to be joining me next week on April 1st, April Fool's Day, and we're going to be offering angel readings to the listeners. So thank you for calling in, Sue.
Yes, thank you, and I'm excited about next week, so you ladies have a good afternoon.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Sue.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, so if we've waited a little bit and we don't seem to have anybody else who's going to call in, so I'm going to go ahead and end the show. And Sharon, I'm going to say thank you very much for being our guest. This was a really, really delightful show, and I really appreciated learning about the festival as well.
Thank you. Well, and I will post some more of the history about the festival on the page that have to go along with the images.
Okay, that'd be great. So, as a reminder to everybody, you can go to Purpose Talk Radio Conversations on Facebook and be able to connect with Sharon, connect with myself. We want to say thank you to Cindy, who has been facilitating both the Facebook group and the phone calls today. If you missed your opportunity to get an angel reading or a card reading, I'm sorry about that, and you can call in next week. And for now, I'm going to say thank you very much, and I wish you soul blessings.
I am me, I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. I am me, I am who I am, I am who I'm gonna be. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny. Walking in the spirit moment by moment, fulfilling my own destiny.